So I wanted to talk today on the subject matter, don't waste the valuable human form of life. It is a quite provocative title, I must admit, a thought provocative title. And when I saw that this title was to be the title of my little talk, I thought, ooh, what will the people think when they hear such a title? But at the same time, I do think it is a very valuable title, and I will speak now, and I do hope that I can awaken your intellectual curiosity. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. In the timeless Indian scripture, the Vedic scriptures, there is a verse which alerts us to the special opportunity which we have once we have obtained the human form of life. According to this spiritual perspective, each one of us is an eternal soul who inherits a temporary material body for a limited amount of time. It is said when you are born, the time of your death is also born. It's a predestined time. When our body, which we have obtained, deceases or is mixed again with the elements. It says that the journey of the soul goes through 900,000 aquatic life forms, 2 million forms which are non-moving, like trees. It's even said that mountains and hills have life. Then the soul advances and goes through 1,100,000 worms and insects forms. Then we come to the birds. Then we come to the beasts, the cats and the dogs. And after having transmigrated through altogether 8 million life forms, or the soul finally achieved the rare species which we call the human species. And now the soul has in the animal form of life pursued the urges of the senses: eating, sleeping, mating, defending, sex life is a mating actually. I see this as very prominent also amongst the human beings and the students. Be wise, condomize, it says there. Also as a human being, in other words, we have these same sensual inclinations. There is something as a human being which we have as a special gift of nature, or special gift of God, which we just don't have in the animal form of life. Modern men would say, well, we have condoms. That's the specialty of the human form of life. We have, in other words, a possibility to have more unrestricted sense gratification, where not so much consequences are there. But the Vedas would disagree. They say that the speciality of human life is to ask the question, who am I? What is myself? Only the human being has actually an ability to ask questions about the soul, and God. The animals do not have this ability. There was once a psychological analysis, and it was questioned if animals can, for instance, understand the grief of the death of a nearby a relative. And there was a very, very intelligent gorilla. Her name was Tito. I have with me Braj Mohan, who comes from a country where Tito used to be the president in the former Yugoslavian Republic. But this monkey was called Tito, actually. It's not the same Tito which you know. And Tito had a daughter, and this daughter, for some reason or another, had an unexpected early death. So Tito was clearly showing signs of grief, that where is my daughter? But and then the researchers communicated with Tito. They had developed a type of language, but they could understand that Tito had not the ability or the intellectual instrumentarium to understand that her daughter had left the body and went somewhere else. So this understanding of a self or a soul as something which is separate from the body was not with Tito. The Vedic scriptures really mark this point, and this self-realization, developing the self, developing the soul, as the specific distinguishing factor of human life. They say this really is special in the human form of life. Animals may be showing intelligence on other levels, but they cannot think of self-realization because they cannot think of a self being separate from the material body and the material senses. So this verse which I was alluding to or hinting at a little earlier is talking about the specific advantage of the human life, the specific chance which is self-realization. I would like to read to you this verse in its original language in Sanskrit. Laptva sudulabhamidam bahusambhavante manushyamartadamanityamapi hadira tunam jateta napatet anumrit yuyavan nishreyasayo vishaya kalu sarvatasyaj. It says, after many, many births and deaths, one achieves the rare human form of life. This form of life is temporary, but it affords one the opportunity to attain the highest perfection. Thus, a sober human being should immediately endeavor for the ultimate perfection in life and not fall down into the repeated cycle of birth and death. After all, sense gratification is available even in the most lowest species of life, whereas God consciousness is only possible for a human being. So the Vedic scripture describes our existence as a circle from birth to youth, to old age, and to death. And then once we have completed one circle, we again take birth in another life form and undergo the same circle from birth, youth, old age, finally to death. It's almost an unending spiral, you could say, which enters into cosmic time and cosmic space. So they say that once the human being is able to understand himself as an eternal soul, as an eternal traveler, if you so want, then and only then it is possible to break through this circle and go to the eternal spiritual world. I must say, Maharaji, have you given a drink to our tired gentleman? Please give him a second drink, because he's really tired from university life. I so much commiserate. I have many, many students who sometimes are like you, so I always keep a barrel of water for them. Now, this is a general understanding. Now we will go a little bit deeper, and then we will open the forum for questions and answers. Please make yourself comfortable. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Now, what exactly decides what will be my next birth once I have completed one circle, or the circle of one life? It is described that at the time of death, our senses, which have so far supplied information through to us, the eyes have supplied the information of form, the ears has made us familiar with the world of sound, the tongue with tastes, and so on. At the time of death, all these channels of information, the sensual channels of information, become silent. The last sense which I maintain is the sense of hearing. Therefore, even when a person is in his last stages and is even comatose, you still have an opportunity to approach this person and say things like, forgive me for the difficult times which we had between us, or you could encourage the person, because he's still hearing, but he is no longer seeing, he's no longer smelling, he's no longer feeling anything with his sense of touch, his skin. He is only hearing, as if from a long distance he is hearing you. Then that sense also becomes shut down, and then the soul finds himself totally surrounded with darkness. Now, after some time, one of the Vedic scriptures, it says 108 nadis, or there's something like channels of the life force, becomes lit. The soul, who is surrounded in utter helplessness and in utter darkness, will see light in one of these nadis or channels or tunnels, you can say, and follow that light and leave the material body for good. It's almost like, well, now it's daytime, and my example could only work really in the night time. Imagine we would sit in the night at 9 o'clock, and all of a sudden the lights would fail us, and then here a light would in this door a light would appear. We would all be drawn towards that light because we feel slightly insecure in the darkness. We don't know, maybe it's that something uncomfortable which will happen. So we will go towards the light and leave the hall through this well-lit exit. So in the same way, at the time of death, the soul follows a lit pathway and goes into, leaves the old body first of all. And then, according to its previous deeds, it will find a new body, and it will be coming through the male sperm into the womb of the next mother. I have something very interesting to relate in this connection. I know a woman, a very she's an opera singer in Berlin, who wanted so much to have a second child. And she has one very healthy child, and she tried to obtain with her husband another child, but the child which was conceived by her left her early when the child was still an embryo. Just, I think you know this, it just left one day, it just fell out or was expelled by the body prematurely. But she wanted, there was a sign that maybe one child is enough for her, but she so much wanted to have a second child that she tried many times again, and then one time, as she was together with her husband, she saw in the room a very old person who looked like coming from Tibet. You know, the lamic, the eyes which are a little bit like this, and really an old face with many folds. And this person communicated and said, "I'm from Tibet. I was a lama." Lama means a Tibetan yogi, you could say. "And I did a lot of austerities. And I will come now to you. But do not be shocked." So she conceived a child, and when the child was born, the child had, I do not know if you know this in, I think you you see I'm not so good in English language, I'm more in other languages, especially German. He had a Down syndrome. Let me now see, do you know what is a Down syndrome? Do we say like this in English language? A Down syndrome. You know what this is, huh? And she's an opera singer, very beautiful lady, and had now this child, and of course she loved the child, but it was difficult for her to understand, really. And she went into the internet and asked some Dalai Lama of Tibet, I had a dream of a lama, of a lama in Tibet. You know, they have this Tibetan people. And then she received the information, "Yes, my dear opera singer, this lama, we believe in Tibet that when a person is born with a Down syndrome, it means that in his previous life he exaggerated in terms of austerities, didn't eat, just meditated, and now in this life he will need more care, and therefore he..." No problem. Therefore, he is born in such a situation where more care needs to be given, because people with a Down syndrome are needing more assistance to go through their lives than ordinary little children. The reason why I tell you this is to alert you a little bit to the human, to our subject, that in the human form of life, we can understand things like the eternity of the soul, the transmigration of the soul from one body to the next body, and we can really use our opportunity. My spiritual master used to often be invited to universities, and he often spoke very, very lively and maybe even a little strongly about the places of education. He was, for instance, invited in the Massachusetts Technical University, and he said, "I'm really missing in this university a department where you study the soul, where you study the eternity of the self, who is part and parcel of God. Where is the science in the Massachusetts University of MTT, I believe it's called. I don't remember. Massachusetts Institute for Technological something. So he also would press the professors very hard, and he said, "You do not give your students real education, because if you don't know who you are, then you may know so many things, but they will not be of any avail. They will be disconnected." So, in my little talk, "Don't Waste the Human Form of Life," I really don't want to now attack all of you. I feel that this is the most wonderful university campus I have seen, so peaceful and so natural. But if I would be, let me say, if I would be my spiritual master, he would now ask you, "What are you doing for your self-realization?" He would ask this in a very pointed way. he would most probably say, "If you do not know who you are, then all your so-called knowledge is like so many zeros without a one before this." This he would say, but I will not now say so strongly to you, because I feel it's such a wonderful university camp and we have a nice day, and if I would now start like this, some of you might start to hate me, and I do not wish to do this. But still, I feel we should be open to this question. I really feel we should think very deeply about our self-realization. We should also get information how we can pursue the path of self-realization, and how we can become more free from illusions, so that we are actually in tune with our eternal self and with God. And our, what is your good name, please? I'm sorry? Madhurya Leela. I hear a computer expert here in the university. She conducts regularly these meetings, and I would encourage you to go to these meetings, to maybe discuss with her also, maybe see if there's some literature you could read about the science of self-realization, and in this way utilize the very, very special human form of life. You are awake now. This is a success of my lecture. Wonderful. I will end with one ancient text on this, how to achieve self-realization. I will read it in Sanskrit first, and then in English, and then I will open the forum for your relevant questions. I cannot wait to receive your questions. First the text though. Mride hamajam sulabam sutulabam plavang sukalpang guruka nadaram mayanukulena nabasvateritam puman bhavadim nataretsa atmaha. Atmaha means someone who commits suicide. The human body, which can award all benefit in life, is obtained after one goes through the cycle of birth and death for many times. It is a very rare achievement. This human body can be compared to a perfectly constructed boat. The spiritual master or spiritual teacher is the captain, and the timeless instructions of the personality of Godhead are favorable winds which impel the boat on its course or push the boat forward. Huh? Considering all these advantages, spiritual teacher, the instructions of God, and the rare achievement of the human form of life, considering all these advantages, a human being who does not utilize his human life to cross the ocean of material existence must be considered the killer of his own soul. This is a timeless text, and I believe listening to such timeless texts can motivate us to go deeper in our spiritual search. I would now be very happy to receive your questions. I'm aware that some of you are on a lunch break and therefore a little bit in time. You have a little narrow time. So those of you who have another engagement later, they can go to Madhurya. You serve it to them. Aha. She will be coming around while the question and answer session is going on, so that you can take a little meal, can take a little lunch, and then continue listening and answering. And when your time comes, you are welcome to leave. Although we don't love to see you leaving, but you may then leave if your next engagement is there. All right. Can I please now see if you have any questions regarding this subject matter? Yes, please. What happens to the soul who commits suicide? Mm-hmm. Do we have such examples on the campus? People who have done? Yeah, we have such examples. See, according to the laws of nature, we all have a certain lifespan. Let us say, from our birth to up when we have completed 82 years. Let us say this is the lifespan. So when the human being is coming, oh, please do this in a very decent and noise reductionist way. Huh? You can do it like tiptoeing. You are from India, you know these arts of serving. So let us say, somewhere here, with the age of 53, I think that's 53, someone commits suicide. He will leave the physical body, but he will take something with him. That's what is called the subtle body, made of mind, intelligence, and ego. He now has committed suicide, and he looks on his dead body, which is lying on the ground. He still has 29 years to go, and before he has completed the allotted life time of 82 years. And what he will do now is he will have to hover in some type of subtle existence as a ghost wait for this 29 more years, which are earlier completed than it is natural. As a result of this, he will suffer very much, because he has all the desires for sense gratification, for eating, for having maybe a fulfilling partnership, and so on. But he just doesn't have the material body to do this. In Greek mythology, this is called the Tantalos torture. Tantalos was a man who was somehow chained in a river. The water went up till here, but he couldn't bring his lips enough down to drink. And he was very hungry, and the grapes and fruits were dangling before his mouth, but he just couldn't get the grapes. He had desires to drink and to eat, but not the possibility to do so. So this is what happens with someone who commits suicide. He finds himself all of a sudden in a waiting room, you can say, before his next body. He is full of material desires and so on and so forth, but he doesn't have the ability to fulfill them. It is very unfortunate. Therefore, often these ghosts do create some trouble for those who live. By the way, as you get your plate, it's very nice vegetarian and healthy foodstuff, so please eat to your full heart's contentment. This is what happens to someone who commits suicide. Was my answer clear enough for you? So you can do something for these people when someone has committed suicide, who's in your immediate, vicinity. You can go to him, chant a sacred mantra in his ear, maybe give holy Ganga water in his mouth, and maybe also perform a little ceremony where you take his picture and then you give to the picture food which is offered to God, prasadam. You could, for instance, take this plate and place it before a picture and just lovingly offer it. This is how you can benefit the person. Thank you for your nice question. Do you think of someone? Do you have someone in mind? Someone on the campus, yeah. It's a very, very nice question which you have asked. I thank you very, very much. The usual course of life is an evolution of the consciousness. But it can happen that a person misuses, or for that matter wastes, his human form of life to such a degree that he almost develops an animal consciousness. There is a very selfish consciousness which is mostly focused on the satisfaction of physical needs, essential stimuli. But you have very, very properly said there's such a gulf of difference between an animal and a human, even if it is an animalistic human, so to say, that before he enters into the next body, some training for the next body is necessary. Yes, to answer your question, it is possible in the Vedic scriptures to develop or to regress. But before you go into before a person who has totally blown it, so to say, or has totally failed to take to the opportunity of the human form of life, he gets into a training camp where his consciousness will be totally reduced to just physical needs. And that is in the traditions of the world, these are the lower planetary systems, or Christianity or Buddhism would say the hellish planets. There, the consciousness becomes so reduced by pain. I would like to give you an example which makes it very clear how a consciousness becomes reduced through pain. Imagine you walk barefoot, and because of callousness, you somehow push your little, is it called toe? Your little toe. In a Yugoslavian language, it's called palac. Against some corner. Then, when it really hurts, you can only think from morning till evening of your little toe. Pain does reduce the consciousness in a way which is almost, embarrassing. So, in the same way, when the soul goes to the lower planetary systems and comes to these painful experiences, then the consciousness gets reduced. Once it was so broad and expanded as a human being, but now it becomes reduced again. Yes, there are examples of regression, and I have even one person from India. He told me once a story which happened in his neighborhood. There was a Hindu man who wanted to marry his daughter. And in Hinduism, this marriage is always a big extravaganza. It costs a lot of money to marry the daughter. I think 20,000 rupees minimum. That's the count I heard. And so this Hindu man was so poor that he had to borrow the money from his neighbor, who was very rich. And the neighbor gave him the money. This man spent it for the marriage of the daughter, but never could return the money during his lifetime. So he died, and after some years, his elder son had a dream in which his father, who had died, appeared to him and said, "Oh, I'm so sorry, but I still owe a debt to our neighbor. He borrowed us 20,000 rupees and we have paid back only 1,200 rupees. And I'm now, I'm now at the house of the neighbor, but I'm in a dog form. I'm his dog. Please help me. And the way to help is that you pay the remaining debt to this neighbor." So the son had heard this. The son was also not very rich. He went to the neighbor and he saw the dog, and the dog looked at him and went like woo and howled, really sad. So the son decided to ask the neighbor, "You know, my father married my daughter and he was very poor." And the neighbor said, it's all right. I gave him the money and I don't expect it back. He's such a good man, and just keep it." And the son said, "No, I have to give back the money. How much did my father return to you?
Ah, it's all right, it's all right.
Did he return to you 1,200 rupees? Ah, yes, yes, that was what he could afford.
Okay, said the son, and he borrowed money, and he then gave the 18,800 rupees back.
And when he did this, imagine this, the dog was there seeing all this, and when the neighbor received the amount due, the dog again gave a big howl, woo! But it was a happy howl, and then died on the spot. The soul was released from the depths. This is what my friend told me. I do know that sometimes we have to be careful with these type of stories. Maybe there are other reasons and other explanations. But I just use these stories not as proofs, but as illustrations to the transmigration of the soul and the possibility to progress, but also to regress. At least in the Vedic scriptures, it is said that regression is possible. The form of life which the soul gets when it regresses is either a dog, monkey, and lion, or other forms which are highly developed. Actually, I must say, no, I made a mistake. This information is not given. I mixed it up with something else. But the soul can regress. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your question. So, would you like to eat a little bit more? We have cooked more. Please don't be shy when it comes to eating. It's not necessary. Maybe a little bit. Why not? What happens with our servers? They are hungry also. if you would like to take a little, you are welcome to go to the table and someone will help you. Mm-hmm. Is there another question? Yes, please.
I've noticed that the human population is increasing as time goes by. And the animal and sea life and stuff like that is decreasing as time goes by. Has it got anything to do with the soul that you were speaking about?
Mm-hmm. I would like to repeat the question for my little audience, my world audience who listens to this on internet later. The question is, I have noticed that the animal population of the earth decreases, like the aquatics and some species are becoming extinct. Whereas the human population seems to increase. The Vedic scriptures look also at life on different planets. The earth is a place which is especially suited for the path of self-realization. Thank you for coming. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Yes, please. Please take. There are many animal species on other planets, really, where the people with animal or the souls who have developed animal consciousness go. It is right on the human on the planet Earth, the human population is increasing. It seems so. We have not any count of the bacteria or of the... it's difficult to really say bacteria life increases like anything. That's the lowest form. My answer would be that I don't think that we are using we are moving towards more enlightenment. I think people are in fact misusing the human form of life in a gross way, and therefore there's a lot of regression going on, but we may not see all the regression which is going on in here and animal forms of life here on this planet Earth. It is not material. It is said enlightenment is really the it's actually the whole purpose of the creation. Everything works towards it and helps the human being to advance if he is willing to learn. Everything in our lives is working towards self-realization and enlightenment. And in fact, we get so many lessons how our senses are so limited, and we should learn. Oops, maybe I'm meant to not imitate the animals, but to do something else with my energy. It is enlightenment. There are three treasures, really, which the human being can get. It's one's relationship with God. That's the first treasure of which you can dig up, so to say, in the human form of life. If you want to use the example of the treasure hunter who finds the treasure box, huh? So the first is Krishna Sambandha, the relationship with Krishna, Krishna Bhakti, or service to Krishna or God, and the third is Krishna Prema, or love of God. These are the three treasures which you can obtain in the human form of life. I wish you all the best. Imagine, like as children we heard, there is maybe on some island under a palm tree a treasure box with gold and jewels. So yes, for all of us there is something like that. There is something like this. There is the relationship to God, service to God, and love for God. These are the treasures which wait for you. I wish you all the best in your progress in life to find them. Anyone else with a question, or should we? Yes, please. How to obtain these treasures or these valuable things? In the Vedic scriptures, it is said that on our journey to enlightenment, or let us say to full God consciousness, we go through different stages. These are almost like stages in a journey. The first is we must develop some impetus for our spiritual journey, and this impetus does come from reading sacred literature and from seeing the example of people who have made the journey. It's so important that a human being gets this impetus, which is considered to be Shraddha. Shraddha means faith, that yes, I can do it, I will do it, and I have faith that it's possible for me to complete my spiritual journey. The second step is to take up the association of people who are in some ways on their spiritual journey. It's called in Sanskrit Sadhu Sangha, association with spiritually minded people. That is so important because again and again as we march or move forward, we are dependent on strengths, and strengths which comes from other humans who are on this progress. Then the third step is that you pick up some spiritual practice. A spiritual practice can bring what is at this moment not visible to our eyes and senses. It can bring that forward. It's almost like when you put wood into the fire place, then the fire will burst forward from the wood. In the association of another fire, the fire which is inherent or present in the wood will come forward. In the same way, association with like-minded or let us say association with like-minded people and then taking up a spiritual practice will bring forward your internal spiritual fire. It will bring that forward. My dear students and my dear devotees and my dear skeptics, it's so absolutely important to have a regular spiritual practice. Thank you for coming. All the best. It's so absolutely important to have a regular spiritual practice. This is like the regular spiritual practice is like fuel in your car. You need it in order to go. If you say, oh, I don't have enough time to practice mantra or japa or reading, it's almost as saying, I don't have enough time to fill fuel in the car. I want to go to Johannesburg, but I'm really in a hurry. I really cannot put fuel into my car. This is not very intelligent. I'm sometimes a little bit like this. I'm so busy that I don't eat. And then people say, well, if you don't eat, you may be able to go on for 2-3 days, but after some time, you will not be able to continue. So sometimes we human beings are so, let me say, unenlightened, that we think we can move forward in our spiritual journey without a spiritual practice. Now, as you have a spiritual practice, you will soon see something which happens in your personality. The unessential things or the disturbing things will start to separate from the good things in your personality. Do you know the art of making paneer cheese? At one stage, Madhura Leela knows, you will put some lemon in the boiling milk and then there will be a separation which takes place. The milk will curdle and become paneer cheese and then the water reportions will be also there. It is a separating. It was mixed, but now with the help of citric acid, the juice of the lemon, it separates. So spiritual practice does the same thing. As you practice, all of a sudden, lust, anger, greed, enviousness, illusion, and your private madness. With this, the Vedic scripture means our neurosis and whatever little wrong wiring we have, that will be separated from us. Madness is too strong of a word in our Western civilization. It will be separated, and then the pure soul, or you, will become much more present much more visible, much more unhampered or unobstructed by unnecessary characteristics. So then other things will develop. You will develop some steadiness in your spiritual practice. You won't always go back and forth. Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming. Bye-bye. It was a pleasure to have you. All the best. All the best. All this will really go. And as a result, good result. You will become steady in your spiritual practice, no longer wavering. Then you will develop some deep, deep taste in spiritual life. That you really feel it's more important to you than your previous material engagements, which seem to be so important. Finally, from ruchi, from taste, you will develop the first levels of God realization, where He actually will become present and visible in your life more and more. I wish you all the best in your spiritual journey. It's an exciting journey. This is the most exciting adventure. My humble request is you should all start your spiritual journey, and for the next program you should help to inform more students. You can actually talk with Madhurya Leela. I got an idea, Madhurya Leela. The announcements of the programs could be posted more visibly at the campus. That helps also. Because people see some more announcements. Now Madhurya Leela does everything herself. She has four hands. and she does already. But
how to make four down as well?
Because they are so beautiful, the colors. Or
yeah.
Oh yeah, that's also nice. If you can put a piece of paper there, if you want to be informed, then leave your email here, and then when new students come, they can leave their emails, and then they get the whole. We do. Wonderful. All right. Then I personally think now our time comes slowly to the end. Is this correct, Madhurya Leela? Hare Krishna. I want to tell you now something personal. I really feel deep in my heart that the spiritual development, a conscious spiritual journey, like our Mataji has asked the question, what are the different stages which we go through, is the most exciting adventure of the human being. Without it, life, especially in modern times, means just eating anxiety from morning to evening. Only when you turn really to the Lord in either by chanting or by reading, then this anxiety leaves the heart, and you immediately feel in the heart this. I can't express it. You feel the reward, so to say, of Krishna's presence in your heart. Haribo? You really need more rest. You work too hard. I can see you're so tired. So, yes, so this This is an immediate reward for someone who actually takes to a spiritual practice, that he does feel relief from this anxiety. I must do this, or this didn't work out, and so on. Sometimes it does help, though, because we to maybe arrange in your life a good amount of time where you are peaceful and not tired, you know, so that you can, in that time, pursue your spiritual calling. It's sometimes necessary to be also a little alone. Alone means to be together with God. We really need this time to really feel this connectedness with the Lord. That is what I have learned over my in my years, that I sometimes do need to take time out and just chant very peacefully. We also, the other day, we sat just next to the ocean and chanted, and we felt Krishna's presence in form of the ocean. We need to have this personal feeling of connectedness. It's highly essential for our lives. So I will now slowly think of leaving, because we have other programs and ideas. We will go now to Phoenix, and we will give a lecture at the temple, and then tomorrow we will leave for Johannesburg and other Lithuanias, other exotic places here. Hope to see you again. I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much. I feel a great desire to join the retreat.
Please do. I think it would, Madhurya Leela, the advantage really is that then it's you and Krishna on a retreat, and you will feel this connection. It would be our great pleasure to have you. I think the best for you would the Govardhan retreat in Vrindavan. I was first go there.
Mm-hmm. I've done it once.
Then I should know you, isn't it?
No, I've been to Govardhan.
Yeah, but we have a, like from the Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education, we have a whole week where we just sit at the sacred, in the sacred valley of Govardhan, and just have devotee association, and give their lectures and seminars going on.
Mm-hmm. I haven't been to the seminar.
Yeah.
So if there is one around Kartik.
It is immediately after Kartik. You might have to search the information on internet. VT, Vrindavan Institute for Higher Education, VIHE. His Holiness Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj has taught lessons there. If it's difficult for you to find them, he will be able to help you.
Mm-hmm.
Good. So all the best then for you. Hare Krishna, Hare Bol.